Hi, I'm Siobhan Fletcher and welcome to the latest edition of our newscast. Now, the December sitting of Tynwald gets underway today, and amongst the topics on the agenda is government's commitment to net zero. Specifically, Middle MHK Stu Peters is to move a motion calling for a referendum on the policy. The motion states that Tynwald resolves that a referendum be held under the Referendum Act 1979 as to whether to abandon or to continue with the policy of achieving net zero carbon emissions as laid out within the Climate Change Act 2021, and that such a referendum be held on the date of and alongside the next Isle of Man general election, this being the 24th of September 2026. It's a proposal that's been praised by some and met with disapproval from others, and in this newscast we'll be hearing from both sides of the argument. Up first is Andrew Langan-Newton, the Secretary of the Isle of Man Green Party.
So I think our first concern as to the motion brought by Mr. Peters MHK is his baseless claims to justify the motion and why the law needs to change, because that's what has to change and that's what's stated in his motion. The Climate Change Act, which sets the legal target of net zero by 2050, that would have to change. So we see that he's made no attempt to properly engage with the issues and set out why the law then needs to change and why the law is wrong. And Mr. Peters states that he's not a climate change scientist, so he doesn't have that qualification to explain that climate change science aspect. But still, despite his statement, he says that the net zero target and the action on climate change is a fraudulent cult. And there is no basis for these statements, and they are really damaging from Mr. Peters MHK, and going to the important steps we need to take as a society and part of a global community that is suffering the immediate effects of climate change now, not into the future. So that means we are already behind schedule on responding to climate change in the Isle of Man. That's our first concern, that Mr. Peters has made no attempt to justify why the law has to change, and he clearly has not engaged with the reason why we need the Climate Change Act to have the 2050 target. A second concern goes to the consequences of taking this step. So firstly, I think it would have issue for the perception of the Isle of Man as a biosphere nation, the world's only incomplete biosphere nation, and our perception as a responsible jurisdiction in the global world, taking matters such as climate change seriously. So taking the step of the referendum and Mr. Peters' lead on this would really bring into question all those things that are really important to our community in the Isle of Man. Secondly, it would raise very complex constitutional questions about the Isle of Man. All our global commitments, we've had the Paris Agreement extended to the Isle of Man by the UK government in 2023, this global commitment to take action on climate change, really significant event that took place in 2015 where the global community came together, recognised the important and pressing need to take action then and into the future on climate change, and reached the agreement to try and keep global temperatures below 1.5 degrees from pre-industrial levels and absolutely not exceeding 2 degrees. We are already at the stage now where we're going beyond that 1.5, and there's questions now about will we go over 2 degrees, which is going to be so damaging not just to the global world but also to the Isle of Man, especially when we see events taking place like the storms that have taken place in the Isle of Man last year, and the temperatures and the recent history of the droughts and floods that have affected farmers, for example. So all those global commitments that the Isle of Man is signing up to, and the UK government having good governance to the Isle of Man, and if there would be a law change, it would have to receive royal assent, and there would be a question whether we'd have a situation where the UK government might decide to deny royal assent or trying to change the law of the Isle of Man because they're taking a step against the good governance of the future of the Isle of Man. And we've got cases like Radio Caroline in the 1960s where we can see these complex deadlock situations arising between the Isle of Man and the UK. So those are legitimate concerns, and also the material impact that delaying action on climate change will have for the people in the Isle of Man. As I said earlier, we've had these storms, like Storm Ewan, for example, that affected the Isle of Man over the last year, and there's been sums of over £1 million stated in a in a question response by the Treasury Minister recently that had to be dedicated to clearing up those storms. So the damages that took place from those storms. We are wedded to a very expensive energy system at the moment. 82% of our electricity is being generated by burning gas in Paul Rose. That's gas that has to be imported to the Isle of Man, gas that has caused the inflation that we've experienced in recent years following the Ukraine war, and that has had a major impact for the community in the Isle of Man in their pockets. So that is the other aspect as well, the final point that I'd make about the impact it'll have for people in the Isle of Man, whereas if we can build an energy system which uses our natural resources, doesn't rely on importing fossil fuels subject to the price in the global world that we've seen increase because of the Ukraine war, and so a cheaper energy system that's cleaner and more efficient for the benefit of the people in the Isle of Man. So actually what Mr. Peters is proposing, what he calls is a fraudulent cult, which has no basis whatsoever and is really damaging for taking action on climate change, is actually going to cost people in the Isle of Man more and puts at risk of experiencing extreme weather changes. That's what's happening now.
Do you think there's kind of a bit of an isolationist view of that kind of idea that you hear a lot of, like, what we're doing doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things? We're quite small and, you know, if we remove ourselves from this, what impact would it make type thing? Do you think people maybe aren't looking at the future in terms of, obviously, putting all this infrastructure in place for greener, cleaner energy is quite expensive in the short term. It's expensive for us right now. But like you say, in the long run, we would have these reliable methods that are our own, that we're not reliant on anywhere else.
Yeah, with respect, I think it's a fallacious argument that creates an idea that would mean that any climate change action would fail. In any community in the world, just look to everyone else and said, we're not going to take action. We're going to look for every other community to take action instead, despite our carbon emissions that are having an impact. Then any action would be fraught and would be frustrated. So actually, the Isle of Man can't say, oh no, we're going to wait for everyone else. We're going to wait for China or India or any other, or the USA. We're not going to take any action now. It's just a fallacious argument that goes around in circles. The Isle of Man has responsibilities. We have a community in the Isle of Man that the government should look in the best interests of and protect. And we know climate change is having an impact in the Isle of Man now. We know the farmers are experiencing extreme droughts and then experience floods. We know the storms that have impacted the Isle of Man that have cost over £1 million in the last year in cleanup. We know we're being impacted. We know the science is because we're burning fossil fuels. So we have a responsibility. We can't close our eyes to that and turn our heads in another direction. So that point is, as I said, is fallacious.
Say that, for example, this motion in Tynwald was successful and we ended up with a referendum. What way would the Green Party see that going? Because I think there is often a thing of, if you speak to, I mean, this is a major generalisation, but if you speak to maybe younger people, a lot more of them, you know, when we've had Andy out in schools talking about green energy with, you know, kids on Manning Line, they're very pro green energy. They're very pro all these different things. You have a very vocal contingent, potentially on social media, who are very anti it. What would you envision that referendum? What way would you see that going, I suppose?
Well, that's a good question, which I don't have the answer to, actually, and I don't have the legislation in front of me to see if it's somehow listed in the legislation. But who would get a vote? Would children under the age of 16 be able to vote in this referendum? They have a say in the future of the Isle of Man, a significant say, I would say. But if they don't get a vote, they're being taken out of that. So there is a question, actually, and I think you're very fair to raise it, about the role of referenda in democracy and the idea that direct democracy, is that in conflict with our way of representative democracy in the Isle of Man, which we've had a Tynwald for a thousand years, it's said. And actually, Tynwald has a defined process of deliberating upon these complex issues and reaching resolutions in the interests of the community, having deliberated on those issues. And actually, is the process of raising the challenge to net zero in this referendum proposal, is that contrary to that deliberative process? We have examples around the world where referendums have played an important role. For example, Ireland recently in the last 10 years. But those referendums came out of a very long deliberative process of citizens' assembly where evidence was heard on these issues, and then a conclusion was reached, and that conclusion, having heard all the significant and relevant evidence, decided to have a referendum on the specific question. Now, it doesn't seem that Mr. Peters has sought to follow that process. He's just seemed to be frustrated by the fact that he can't have his way and he can't persuade the MHKs and the members of the Legislative Council to change the Climate Change Act in the deliberative process within Timbald. And he said, OK, well, I'm going to go to the people in this process, which we have a challenge to, as I said, because it's going to be not in the interest of the future of the Isle of Man. But it's also going to be a step away from that very extant traditional deliberative process where the MHKs and the MLCs receive evidence and deliberate upon it and makes the determinations.
Yeah, because I do find the concept of a referendum quite interesting, because, I mean, even looking at over in the UK, when, you know, the Brexit debate happened and there was a vote on that, the amount of young people who were below that age of that cutoff who would have completely, you know, flipped the outcome of that referendum, it's a very interesting thing to put it to a yes-no vote. You know, there's a million things we could talk about on that. I mean, Mr. Peters argues that, you know, he's hearing from constituents and other people alike who are very much against the net zero policy. Obviously, we can't foresee the outcome of a referendum. But do you think that those concerns, do the Green Party hear them, see that they're valid? I mean, how do you respond to some of the things that people critique of this policy?
Well, I think the concerns are important to listen to understand maybe the positions that people are taking and also where they're getting their information from, and trying to engage on that aspect about contrary views. But often it's a case of trying to communicate to people appropriately the benefits of the transition and the consequences of inaction. And there is some great examples of that around the world. For example, I can think of Octopus Energy in the UK. They had a scheme called the Octopus Energy Fan Club, I think. And if they built wind turbines in an area and you could see the wind turbines turning from your house, you got 50% off your electricity bill. And that's a great illustration of connecting people with the benefits of these changes. Benefits that are very clear that are going to take place: cheaper, cleaner, more efficient energy, and also the consequences that are avoided about delay, which is these huge storm damage. So if, and I would call for leadership from Manx Utilities and from the Isle of Man government on these things, how can we better communicate the rewards of the transitioning now to low carbon, clean and cheaper electricity generation, low carbon heating, low carbon transport? And how can we also communicate the consequences of inaction? So, yeah, that's an opportunity for the Isle of Man government and for the Manx Utilities. And this has been played out around the world already. I'd encourage the Isle of Man government and Manx Utilities to look towards those means of communication. And the other point I didn't raise earlier, and I meant to, is there was a very significant European Court of Human Rights judgment in 2024, judgment that I was in the making for about 4 years, because I think the claims were issued in 2020 or around then. So it took 4 years to get that judgment, a huge judgment, hundreds of pages of long, considering in detail the reasons why we need climate change action now and why we can't delay, and then placing a legal responsibility upon governments that are subject to the European Convention of Human Rights, including the Isle of Man government, that has now legal responsibilities under the Human Rights Act 2001. And actually what Mr. Peters is proposing, what he calls is a fraudulent cult, which has no basis whatsoever and is really damaging, that would be contrary to the Isle of Man government's legal obligations. So that is, again, another constitutional issue that would be drawn out by this process.
Is there anything else you want to add that you feel like we've not covered specifically around this motion on Tuesday?
I don't think so, but I think take it as an opportunity and take it to as a call to the Isle of Man government to reach out and look for ways to communicate the consequences of inaction and also the opportunities of expeditious action, action now and not delaying, action in decarbonising our electricity system, action to decarbonise our heating system and our transport system. And so actually, not just to deride Mr. Peters MHK for raising this point and his baseless claims about it being a fraudulent cult, but actually taking it as an opportunity to take action now. And that will be for the benefit universally of the people in the Isle of Man and the global forum as well.
So how does Mr. Peters respond to these arguments, and why has he felt compelled to table the motion in the first place? Well, I asked him. I know we have talked to you on this before, but just sort of briefly, I suppose, for anyone who's not heard of this being on the order paper tomorrow, why have you brought it forward?
I think it's important to recognise that this isn't necessarily a referendum about net zero. It's more about a referendum to determine whether or not the Manx public support the government's incredible spending on it. That's the thing. I brought a motion to Tim Wald this time last year to suggest that we had a bit of a moratorium on net zero spending, and that was defeated. I mean, you know, just to lay my cards on the table, I've been against net zero from the very start, from, I think, 2005, when I worked at Manx Radio, and I watched the Al Gore film, An Inconvenient Truth, which was the starting point for a lot of people as far as climate change mitigation was concerned. And I just watched it, and I was amazed at the millions and millions of pounds that had been spent producing what wasn't a documentary, it was a propaganda piece. And it just sat very uneasily with me that if anybody needed to sell a concept that hard, then it didn't really pass the sniff test. So I've been against it from the start. The reason for this referendum, and it, to be fair, it wasn't my idea, it was Paul Quine's, former MHK, but the reason for this referendum is to see whether or not the government does have the public support for it that it claims. Fairly recently, I think Claire Barber, the DEPA minister, said that, you know, the majority of people are behind net zero plans. When talking to people, I don't believe that that's true. Now, it might be that I'm operating in an echo chamber where the people who talk to me about it recognize a kindred spirit. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that that's certainly true of DEFA and all the net zero people. They talk amongst themselves and convince themselves that everybody's behind them on it. And I don't believe that's the case. So the referendum isn't to stop net zero. I think we should continue to try and make the place greener and cleaner. But the way that we do it, I think, is open to question. And I think that the public of the Isle of Man need to be behind it, because we're talking about possibly hundreds of millions of pounds that, to me, would be better spent on healthcare, education, roads and all the rest of it.
Do you think the motion will be successful tomorrow? Do you think that how do you think it's going to land? Because like you say, you've kind of previously brought up similar issues, particularly to do with the spending element of it. How are you foreseeing this going for you tomorrow?
Well, the thing about tomorrow is that the motion is for a referendum to determine whether or not the public are behind net zero. Like I say, it's not to stop net zero. I think that in some way that should continue. For example, I was criticised recently because as chairman of the post office, I was part of a board that decided to put solar panels on the top of the sorting office and have electric vehicles to electrify our delivery fleet. And people said, how can you possibly consider that? You know, isn't it hypocritical given your views on net zero? My point is, no, it's the way that these things should be done. It should be based on, you know, it's going to be cheaper for the post office to run a fleet of electric vehicles that we power from our own resources than it is to continue with diesel. And that, to me, is the future of net zero. When these technologies become more mature, when it costs less to fit an air or a ground source heat pump than it does a gas boiler, that's when people will take it up. I don't think it's for governments to force people to spend, you know, thousands of pounds per household on what is an ideological, it's a crusade by people. at any cost. And the trouble is that it's not generally at their cost, it's at ours.
Do you think it's hard, though, because almost to get to the time when these things are more accessible, like, you know, the price of an EV dropping down and you know, you mentioned heat sources there, like, obviously, to get to that point, do we not need to put a lot of money into it at this stage?
But the money is not being spent in the right areas for me. So we're spending money, or in the great scheme of things, not a vast amount of money, on things like a carbon literacy course, which is a bit like the Chinese re-education program to turn doctors and physicists into farmers. So I don't think that we're spending it in the right way. To me, the money that was voted when I was first elected, the 2022 budget, £40 million put aside for net zero, that would have put solar panels on an awful lot of roofs. And my worry is that the government has decided, no, we need to, through the MUA, we need to be the sole supplier of energy on the Isle of Man. And that mitigates against people like me and others who might put solar panels on our roofs, but there seems to be very little support for that.
Do you think that there's an issue here of there's a level of misunderstanding in that, even like me talking to you right now, I'm hearing your point of view in terms of, you know, let's go for these green options, but you disagree with kind of the way the policy's gone about and the way the money's spent, and I can totally see that argument. But obviously this proposed referendum, I suppose, is to sort of scrap the net zero policy, change something that's in law in the Climate Change Act, So if you put it to a tick box of a yes, no, which I suppose is the risk of a referendum, is that people might misinterpret, I don't know, even your core beliefs on it from what I'm sort of getting from this conversation. You know what I mean?
I think the problem with net zero is that 5 years ago when I was standing for election, if you'd have said to 100 people in Strand Street, do you agree that we ought to try and make things greener and cleaner and more sustainable, use more renewables and all the rest of it, you know, probably 90% of people would say yes, and I might have been amongst them. The fact is that after 5 years, after a seismic shift in support for net zero around the world, all sorts of jurisdictions are now saying, not least America, are now saying it's a bust, it doesn't work, the science isn't safe. You know, people on the other side are very keen to say, well, 97% of scientists around the world believe that it's a man-made phenomenon and that we ought to do something about it. That is just an outright lie. There was never a 97% consensus. And science isn't about consensus anyway. You know, the science is settled. Science should never be settled. And a lot of countries around the world are realizing now that the plans that they've signed up to aren't working, and they're actually driving countries into a recession. And it's time to just stop and look at it. That's not necessarily what I'm trying to achieve with this. It's too late for this house to do anything about net zero. And, you know, why we signed up for these things, I'm not 100% sure. I think it was probably all done with for the right reasons. But it's time now to give a clear steer to the incoming house in September next year about how much public support they've got for it.
Sort of put some of the criticisms from the Green Party to you now, just because obviously I've spoke to Andrew Langdon Newton from the Green Party. Their concerns include things like international consequences in terms of like almost a global perception of the Isle of Man. I mean, we're the only entire biosphere nation, that sort of thing. And we're, you know, signed, the Paris Agreement was extended to us. And so I suppose what it will look like internationally if we did kind of go, actually, we're going to scrap this.
It's not a case of scrapping it. It's a case of taking a pragmatic view of it. And it's a case of moving away from this government model of we're going to spend your money on this to how can we get the best result over a period of time that is going to benefit everybody. And I don't believe that CO2 is the driver of climate change. I might be an outlier on that, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that what we've got to do is to look at what's happening and decide whether or not our plans are the right way forward. And before you can do any of that, you need to know how much public support you've got for it. Now, I think it's fair to say that I don't believe in referenda for every single reason, because you know, if I did, then if we had referendums all the time, none of us would pay income tax and the steam packet would be free. And so a lot of these things wouldn't work in terms of a referendum. That's why this is really simple. I'm not suggesting that we come out of the Paris Agreement or anything like that. I want to find out how much public support there is for it so that the incoming administration next year has got a clean sheet and can say either yes or no, we're going to carry on as we are, we're going to double down on it, we're going to spend millions, tens of millions on a new interconnector, we're going to spend fortunes on a wind farm. And just as an aside on that, I see that the latest science on wind farms is that they've been degraded by the scientists. So people around the world are realizing that the wind farms don't produce anything like the amount of electricity on a reliable basis that had previously been claimed. And I'm sure that that's true of everything.
Yeah, I mean, the wind farm's a whole nother topic I suppose we could talk about for hours and hours. I mean, in terms of the referendum model, I find it interesting that obviously you say you couldn't really have one on every topic. And that's very, very true. I mean, there is always a divide, though, with referendums, isn't there? Almost in terms of age groups, especially, you know, you could look back in the UK recently in terms of the Brexit referendum, that would have gone potentially very differently if younger people had been able to vote, if it was, you know, in that lower bracket. I think green energy and net zero potentially is another divided point where young people have maybe a different opinion. I mean, you know, is it a good enough barometer, I suppose, of the national feeling if it's just, you know, voting age and above?
Yes, I think so, because it's voting age and above are the people who are going to have to pay for it. If you're an 11-year-old at school, then you'll want everything to be green because it's not going to cost you anything. But I think if you're a voter, and the chances are that you're probably a taxpayer as well, the idea of a referendum on the same day as the general election is that it shouldn't cost much money at all to do this. It also means that pressure groups can't get involved, as they often do if there are consultations and things where people's opinions are sought. You know, you get these pressure groups sending thousands and thousands of responses that skews the data at the end of it. This is very simple. In terms of the voting population of the Isle of Man, how many are for net zero or current plans for net zero, and how many would like to just, you know, see maybe a different approach to it?
And I suppose finally, I did want to put this quote directly to you, which I emailed you about earlier. Mr. Langan Newton claims that essentially you've called for a referendum because you're not happy that Tim Wald hasn't lent towards abandoning the policy. He said, quote, that you seem to be frustrated that you can't have your way and can't persuade the MHKs and members of LegCo to change the Climate Change Act in a deliberative process within Tim Wald. So that's the almost rationale behind this referendum. I suppose, what would you say to that?
I would say it's probably right as far as that's concerned. But the thing that first appealed to me about the idea of a referendum was government constantly saying the majority of people are keen to continue the way that we are. I don't believe for a second that that's true. I would like to prove it one way or the other.
Perfect. And I mean, I suppose one last question, actually. I asked you earlier whether you thought it would be successful. Obviously, we kind of have known that this motion's been coming since about September, I believe you tabled it. Have you had any sort of feedback about it, you know, any, whether it's from constituents or, you know, I suppose you said earlier it could be in a bit of an echo chamber, but are you seeing support for this?
I've had a huge number of emails to me about it from constituents and people around the island who say, good for you. I don't agree with this. Nobody that I know agrees with this. And it's about time that government opened its ears to what the population really thinks.
Brilliant. That's all I prepared, Stu. Is there anything else you think I've missed or anything else you want to expand on or add at all?
No, that's fine.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely welcome.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.